Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all. So many. It's lovely to feel the Sangha gathering today. For how many of you is this your first time practicing mindfulness meditation? Okay. Not sure. Hold your hand up again. Okay, good. So, again, my name is Temple Smith, and for those of you I'm meeting for the very first time, my name was Temple at birth, so you can have at least that question answered. today we're going to talk about the Buddha's instructions in mindfulness of breathing and how to use mindfulness of breathing in a progressive way to have the insights the Buddha wanted to teach us. And he gave very concise instructions, and so that's what we're going to look at today. And hopefully by the end of this weekend, you'll either be refreshed and reminded on what these instructions are, or you might learn it for the first time. But once you see these instructions, you can hear them repeated through a lot of different meditation teachings. So they're core to how the Buddha taught meditation. And it's how he practiced meditation himself, even after his awakening. So we're in good company if this is how the Buddha became enlightened and what he liked to do after his own enlightenment. So the first part of mindfulness practice is tuning into what is mindfulness. And so we're learning how to teach this in the West, and we're learning our own analogies and what works for us culturally. One way that I've described mindfulness recently that people have found helpful is to think back on old vinyl records and how we used to place the needle in the track. Now, there's enough elderly people I can see that you might not know how to do that. If you don't know how to do that, you can at least follow the imagery. But for some of us, we can go back to actual memory of getting needles, putting the needle on the record player, placing the needle in the track. And what the record needle does is it's a very simple device. And the record needle arm puts it out so it balances right on top of the record, with just enough pressure that it makes, has fidelity in its contact with the record that moves below it. And it's the idea of the record needle just to rest, and in that resting and playing just the bumps right underneath it, it can play silence, it can play symphonies, it can play blues, it can play folk music, it can play recorded speeches. That one needle can play all the music that can be put on a record, all kinds of music, because it's willing to rest and play just what's right underneath it. And that's actually what we're trying to develop in mindfulness practice, the ability to rest in the stream of what's happening, rest in the simple stream of simple present time experiences. We have many habits, though, that react to our experience and spend a lot of time planning our reactions and remembering our reactions and thinking about the future and then having a complex relationship to the present. So a lot of mindfulness practice is calming down our agitated minds, learning to collect them to one point, and then resting that point intimately in the stream. And then reality is the big record, and we rest faithfully in that stream, and then mindfulness can then rest in anything that reality is playing. It can play quiet times, it can play loud times, simple times, chaotic times. It can play, you can be mindful in the beginning of a lifelong romance, and you can be mindful if that romance doesn't work out. You can be mindful daytime, nighttime, winter, summer, times of collective peace, times of collective turmoil. It's just the willingness of that record needle to rest right below and play the music as it comes to the needle. And the needle doesn't struggle with the music that it's about to play. It doesn't ask for a break. If it's a long symphony, the needle doesn't ask for a break. It just keeps playing. And then after the symphony passes, the needle rests in silence for as long as there's silence. So guided by that image, that's what we're using the breath to cultivate, is a simple, a more simple relationship to the present. So not thinking about it and not having our old reactions to sounds or ideas, or not to use our old habits to plan the rest of our day or plan the rest of our year. We let go of all those complicated activities and learn to rest right in the stream of what's happening. For those of you who have played with math and physics, and maybe some of these concepts of two-dimensionality, three-dimensionality, four-dimensionality, this is just a little aside, but mindfulness ends up being a three-dimensional record needle playing the fourth dimension of the mind going through time. And so it's a bunch of nows, now, now, now. But it's the three dimension that we're in that moment, made up of sights and sounds and thoughts and body sensations. And so we rest in the stream of all that's happening and try our best to stay in that stream. That may not be a way you could live a complicated, ordinary life. So some of us do go to retreats and do come to day long so we can simplify the day, develop mindfulness, and then learn to integrate it. It's not a whole life strategy to just rest in the stream of what's happening. And we do need responses at some point. But if we're always responding, sometimes we get caught up in the habit of our responses. And then we lose that ability to rest in what's actually happening. We think we're in the present moment, but as people practice mindfulness meditation, they can see they're not actually resting in the present moment. A lot of it is bouncing around through old and new habits of reaction. So we're guided into mindfulness of the breathing, and the Buddha gave 16 steps, and we'll go over the 16 steps over the course of these 2 days. The first thing we're going to practice is mindfulness of the breath, and then mindfulness of the body supported by mindfulness of breathing. So in mindfulness of breathing, we just rest in the simplicity of in-breathing, and then we rest in the simplicity of out-breathing. And then we see if we can catch the next in-breath and then the next out-breath. So that's the simple instruction. Reason that's difficult is the mind's not used to doing that. And so at some point it gets bored of breathing, and then habits of thought come and the mind wanders. So we then very patiently bring it back to breathing in and breathing out. It's helpful if you can practice in a way where that's enjoyable, where that feels like a relief to let go of the complications of your thoughts, and then feel the empowerment that any thought can be let go of by returning and feeling your next in-breath or out-breath, which gives us more choice over what thoughts we engage with. So just that much, learning to find refuge in simple breathing, practicing in a way where that is soothing, to just feel a breath in, just feel a breath out, and then gaining some choice over what thoughts we engage with and what thoughts we learn to let go because we learn they're not important. 98% of our thoughts are repetitive and they feel important in the moment, but you could let go of 98% of your thinking and have just as productive a life, maybe even more productive. So people learn that over time. You don't have to take that on as a belief, but you can prove that to yourself, that We could spend a lot more of our day, even our complicated modern life, using mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of our body, just knowing that we have a body, starting to feel its overall length in the posture it's in, and then coming down and feeling its lived body sensations. We could do, if we did that with 90% of our attention throughout a day, the 10% left over, we could be plenty productive in that time. So today and tomorrow are days where we can practice this, and we can have radical faith to at least experiment with letting go of every thought and coming back to feel the next in-breath, the next out-breath, and seeing how many in-breaths and out-breaths we can feel in a row before we wander again. So that's the basic practice of mindfulness of breathing. The most simple way the Buddha put it, and where he would start people, is saying, mindfully I breathe in, mindfully I breathe out, and I practice letting go. So no matter how complicated the instructions get, they start from, I'm aware I'm breathing in, I'm aware I'm breathing out, and I practice letting go. So no matter what I say that may sound more complicated than that, they're just nuances in how to drop into that experience and then extend it from that base. But why don't we practice some after this initial encouragement? We'll practice mindfulness of breathing, and then using mindfulness of breathing to become more body aware and learning to be aware of our bodies and also relax our bodies. So with that said, find a posture that is comfortable for your body, that will allow your body to be in stillness, in restful, peaceful, relaxed stillness. For many of you, that might be a comfortable chair already in your apartment or your home. And for some of you, if you have aggravated body pain, the right posture of stillness might be lying down. And for some of you that are experiencing a lot of sleepiness, you might start standing in front of where you would sit. And then when the sleepiness passes, you can quietly sit down. But if you were to start sitting or lying down, you might just easily slip off into sleep. So these are the three still postures, inviting ourselves into restfulness and peacefulness just in our physicality by lying down, by sitting, or by standing. So we find that posture. Then allow yourself to take several deep breaths in and out. The powerful thing about the breath is that it's an expression of how we're feeling. So if we're agitated, even unconsciously, our breathing will be shallow. So by coming into a restful posture, taking a few deep breaths in, enjoying the letting go process of breathing out, enjoying the welcoming in process of breathing in, and see if you can find a way with your posture and with your breathing that it's pleasant and soothing, that you're de-escalating anything agitated. You can enjoy the way the chair or the floor or your bed is supporting you. You can enjoy the ease of your posture. You can enjoy the ease of simply breathing in and breathing out. And if you haven't already, you can let your breath become natural. Let your body breathe. Your body is a very intelligent animal. So we can rest. Let our body keep us warm, have a heartbeat. Digesting food, processing tea or coffee or water, and it's breathing. So now the breath doesn't have to be deep, it doesn't have to be long. The body will know what kind of breathing it needs. And while you're enjoying breathing in, breathing out, you might notice every now and then your breath is naturally shorter or naturally longer. Every now and then your body takes a long breath. Then sometimes the body is quite satisfied with a very shallow breath. Doesn't seem to go very deep into your lungs. But the body's peaceful with that breath. Sometimes breaths are shorter, sometimes they're longer. Our job is to relax, be simple, and see if we can enjoy breathing in, breathing out, with a spirit of letting go in that process. Letting go as we breathe in, and letting go as we breathe out. We can welcome ourselves more fully in this practice by giving ourselves full permission to let go of anything in the past. You can pick it up later. Let's have a restful relationship to anything in the past. And the same with anything in the future. Any ways that our minds are drawn into thinking about the future. We can practice letting go and relaxing our relationship to the future. And we can let go of any way that we are making mindfulness practice complicated. We can allow this to be simple, relaxed, and then gently appreciating, just in breathing, followed by just out breathing. Out of habit, our minds wander. Whenever we realize we're not with what it feels like to breathe in or breathe out, we can let go, relax, and guide our attention to this simple breathing experience. Relaxed. And aware that you're breathing in. Relaxed and aware that you're breathing out. And letting go. Letting go of whatever is not the breath. And even letting go of each part of the breath as it's finished. So you're aware of breathing in, And then you let go of being aware, breathing in, so that you can be fully present and breathing out. You let go of breathing out. Mostly just by relaxing. while practicing, we look for a balance between relaxation, but also presence with your in and out breathing. When there's a lot of relaxation, sometimes we become dull and adrift. And without the relaxation, our effort might fight or struggle with our wandering minds or trying to keep ourselves present. We want to blend these two so we have relaxed effort relaxed persistence. If some part of the present moment isn't easeful or isn't pleasant, the mind won't want to be there. So that's where relaxation and ease play a very important role for developing mindfulness. And once you know how to relax, you might find that you space out a little bit. So how can you develop and welcome some effort to not wander so easily without undermining a sense of relaxation? Keep playing with that balance. Many of us need lots of relaxation from our overcommitted and overstimulating lives. And if you start to space out in that relaxation, see what it's like to gently commit yourself to appreciating. This is an in-breath, and this is an out-breath. This is an in-breath, and this is an out-breath. mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out, practicing letting go, even of your past practice. Let go of the first part of this meditation session. Let go of the rest of it. And see if that gives you more room to appreciate just this one breath at a time. Sometimes there are specific things we need to let go of. And sometimes it's just the attitude. The attitude of letting go. That creates a wholeness of our attention for just breathing in and just breathing out. We now have time for walking meditation. And if you're an experienced insight mindfulness walking meditator, you can just come back at 10:30 Pacific time and do your own practice. If you'd like to stay for a little bit of orientation on how to do walking meditation, I'll give a little instruction. So today we're practicing mindfulness, both in still postures, like lying down, sitting, and standing. And you can move between those still postures to give yourself a sense of ease, a sense of simplicity. And then learning to find your body and your breath in those still postures for the ease and relaxation and the simplicity of those still postures. There's also walking meditation, and walking meditation is the bridge from mindfulness found in stillness to mindfulness where we're moving through the world and opening our eyes, interacting with our environment a little bit. So it's not meant to be exactly like stillness meditation, because you'll be making some choices how to navigate your environment. With your eyes open, you'll be taking in more visual stimulation. But walking meditation is a little bit more like our ordinary lives, since we don't sit in stillness much unless we're on retreat or in formal practice. So learning how to find mindfulness when your body's moving, when your eyes are open, and where you probably have to make a few choices to navigate your environment. It's a great extension and great discovery of mindfulness practice and actual movement, actual choices. So the typical mindfulness formal walking meditation is to find a place in your house, maybe just outside or within your house, maybe in a hallway, where you can walk in a straight line and take anywhere from 10 to 15 to 20 steps. You take those 10 steps, appreciating one step at a time, like we appreciate one in-breath, one out-breath. You can appreciate a left step, a right step, a left step. And just as with breathing, we're not trying to get anywhere. We're trying to be that record needle just rising and falling with the breath. When we do walking meditation, we're not trying to get somewhere. We're trying to be in that particular moment and using the feeling of the body and the motion of the body to be that point of contact. So even with our ears open, taking in sounds, our eyes open, taking in sights, where we guide our attention is primarily to feel your body while it's taking these small steps. There'll be a lot of habit for the attention to go out your eyes and then to start thinking about what you're seeing. There'll be intentions when you're at home doing walking meditation to do laundry that's lying on the floor or wash dishes accumulating in the sink. So you have to let those go. You have to learn how to be simple, just taking steps forward and steps back, steps forward and steps back, turning around, taking 20 steps, turning around, taking 20 steps. Each time you set off to take your 10 or 15 or 20 steps, renew your commitment and say, may I gently but persistently be with one step at a time. And may I feel what my body feels in taking those one steps at a time. We do an amazing thing as a two-legged animal to balance. And we've figured out how to do something very few animals have done, and it's changed our entire species. So you could rediscover this simple activity you take for granted. The activity of walking back and forth. Sometimes people get self-conscious to walk back and forth. So please just let that go and give a little stretch into trying something out, taking these steps back and forth. And then towards the end or towards the beginning, if you need to use the bathroom, you can do that or do one simple thing. But try to give as much time to the formal practice of walking as you can. The practice that we did earlier, that simple practice of being at ease in a still posture and simplifying, letting go faithfully, patiently, orienting ourselves to be aware of in-breathing and out-breathing in a way that makes us feel restful, collected, present. That becomes the place where all the other mindfulness practices grow out of. And so we're always returning back to that, the simple in and out-breathing. Learning to rest ourselves, collect ourselves, letting go of habits of mind, letting go of agitated habits of our bodies, just by simple breathing in and breathing out. And the teachings go on from there, and they're always hooked to or connected to breathing in and breathing out. So this is a progressive teaching that goes all the way to full liberation. But every step of the teaching says, while breathing in, I notice this, or while breathing out, I let go of that. So everything is repeated with in and out breathing. So what we're going to add in this particular sit is opening up awareness of the body and not trying to change anything in the body other than through awareness. Can we invite relaxation? But beyond that, some part of it is just going to be breathing in, breathing out, and then being aware of your shoulders or your back or your arms. And then after that awareness, to see if you might end up being more relaxed just by breathing and being aware of those parts of your body. You also might be able to welcome in a sentiment, hey body, you are invited to relax. You don't have to stay on guard. You don't have to hold tensions of the past. So, with some very patient, gentle self-talk, you can invite your body to let go of any conscious or unconscious stress that it's holding. But we'll rock back and forth between just being aware of the body while breathing and then inviting the body to relax. And this is the considered the foundation of the first foundation of mindfulness, breath and body. And it's where all the other practices of mindfulness grow out of. So again, to do that, let's find ourselves into a still posture, one that invites ease and relaxation, and then presence within that relaxation. So the three still postures are standing, sitting, and lying down. Standing is the least restful. Lying down is the most restful, but sometimes there's a lot of falling asleep and spacing out. That's not the worst thing. If it helps with your body with pain, and if it helps you have a peaceful relationship to body awareness, if it helps alleviate any way your body is struggling, it's worth it to have a body that's in ease, to have a little bit of spaciousness, spaciness. Because then you can bring mindfulness into that field of relaxation. But if your body is getting tense and aggravated and it makes you more willful in your practice, then you won't get the benefit of relaxing your body and having it taste like a place you want to be. If you're too willful and the body is unhappy, then the mind really wants to wander and you have to be even more willful to bring your attention back. So, to find a way that helps your body be at ease as much as is possible in these conditions, and then also to be present within that relaxation. And so, for many people, that is the sitting posture. But it's an interesting reflection. Is standing, sitting, or lying down the right posture for my body right now? We find ourselves in that still posture. Again, taking a few deep breaths and relaxing, letting go of the breath. Giving ourselves full permission to let go of any concerns or burdens in relationship to the past and the future. And inviting ourselves to be whole and simple in our attention while we breathe in and breathe out. And here you might take interest in what you actually sense as you breathe in and breathe out, more than just the fact that you're breathing in and breathing out. And you start to take interest in the sensations in the body of breathing. And can you relate to being aware of your breath in a way that's soothing and calming, peaceful and restful? Does your mindfulness of breathing feel like a short vacation from worries, from complication? Does it feel relaxing? And as you let your body breathe, does it want short breaths or shorter breaths? Does it want long breaths? Is the pace of breathing quick or slow? How deep does the breath go into your chest? We don't want to make the breath perform in a certain way. We want to see if we can be relaxed. Let the body breathe. And rest with some appreciation. This is what our bodies do. They breathe. You're welcome to stay with the simple experience of breathing in and breathing out, and where it's easiest of your breath. We can also use the breathing in and out, our breathing in and out, to become more aware of our whole body. So one simple way is to open, to get a wide angle lens of mindfulness. It's generally aware of your whole posture, not looking for any specific detail. Just roughly where are your arms, your legs, your torso, your head. And what version are you sitting, standing, or lying down? Are your hands together or resting apart? So let your in and out breathing support your awareness that you have a body. And your body is in this posture. And are there any obvious places where you could invite your body to relax? If your mind can stay relaxed, you can bring yourself into a little more detail. For example, you might feel your shoulders, and if they're affected by your breathing, while breathing in and breathing out, can you become aware of what you feel in your shoulders? And what sensations do you feel in your shoulders? Motion from breathing, contact with your clothing, an intuition where your bones are, surrounded by soft tissue. We can carry a lot of stress in our shoulders. So you might give them permission to relax. You can come down from your shoulders to feel your shoulder blades. The backside of our rib cage and our upper back, supported by breathing in, supported by breathing out. What sensations are there in your upper back? Can you lightly be aware of where there are bones, where there's muscle, where there's skin? The bones of your shoulder blades, the bones of your rib cage, the areas of muscle. Surrounded by skin. And if you're curious, you can go down below your upper back, into your mid back and your lower back, the bottom of your rib cage. The area behind your abdomen, your muscle, your vertebra, your spinal column. And see if you can relax and enjoy this body awareness. Supported by breathing, can you be aware of your mid and lower back? And that becomes a doorway to feel your hips, your sacrum, your pelvis, feeling that stability, your lower back, sacrum, and pelvis area. Breathing in and breathing out, we can go below our hips and pelvis and become aware of our upper legs. Large muscles surrounding our largest bone. Held together with tendons. Nourished by blood, surrounded by skin, you can welcome a tone of gratitude, of presence. Coming round to our knees, to our lower legs, our shins, our calves, surrounding bone, protected by skin. We feel our ankles and our heels, the soles of our feet, the front pads of our feet and our toes. Supported by breathing in and out, we can patiently relax with interest. What do you feel in your feet? You feel warmth, coolness, contact, pressure, heartbeat. You feel the anatomical parts of bone and muscle and skin. Coming back up to our shoulders. We can go out and appreciate our arms, our upper arms, resting by our side. A possible bend at our elbow and our lower arms, into our wrists and our hands, palms and our fingers. Relaxed and patient and interested, supported by breathing. Aware of your hands. Coming up from our hands, we have our lower front torso, our belly area. Muscles and organs. And skin. Coming up to our mid-torso, we get the beginning of our rib cage and our diaphragm, our solar plexus. The large sensations of breathing in our rib cage as our chests expand and relax. Above our chest, we come up and we can feel our throat extending up from our shoulders. Our throats become our jaw and our tongue inside our mouth, our teeth. We have the surface of our face supported by bone underneath, our lips and our nose, our eyes, our cheeks, extending from our face, we can broaden out to include our forehead. And out to the sides, we get our ears. The top of our head. The back of our head. Back of our necks. Back down to our shoulders. Now you might feel your breath. It's inside of a whole body made up of many anatomical parts, alive with sensations. Sometimes just being aware of the body relaxes it. And sometimes we become aware of areas holding tension. We invite them to relax and we breathe with them. And very slowly the tension thaws. It's best not to have a big agenda. But just breathe and be aware of your whole body with a patient invitation for it to relax. As our body relaxes, you might feel in those parts more sensations, the refinement of your pulse, of warmth, tingling aliveness. Some parts of the body might still be tense or numb. Those parts that are relaxed, usually circulation improves. There's warmth. Aliveness. You might feel a happy body. Or parts of your body are happy, relaxed, and alive. Another half hour for walking meditation and see what it's like to bring your awareness in your body and see if you can enjoy the anatomy of your body as it walks, especially in your hips and your legs, down in your feet, and see if you can walk in a way where it's relaxing and delicious to be present, to take in the sights of what you see. Invite your body to be relaxed and then rediscover this incredible dance we take for granted that we can balance on two legs and really balance on one leg at a time while the other is moving. So enjoy your walking practice and we'll come back at 11:30. Insights you learn along the way as you do that, but the first part of meditation, and you'll see it repeated in the 16 steps, the first 12, again, are for collecting, gathering, soothing a mind that's restless, agitated, and scattered. And then you use that collected attention, that relaxed attention. And the heart and mind, when it's relaxed, tends to have its own sense of well-being because it's not stressed or agitated, imbalanced, scattered. And so the heart space that develops in samatha practice starts to have a wellness in it that's not based on any one transient experience, but the wellness of your own mind, the wellness of your own heart, starts to give you the chance to do vipassana meditation, which is the second category, where you look at the flow of reality inside and out. And through that greater intimacy with your inside world, your outside world, and how they're relating, we can see things more clearly. And seeing things more clearly, we let go of delusion. And letting go of delusion, we let go of a lot of our confusion and aggravation and frustration. So these two categories of meditation, the samatha practices for tranquility and collection, the vipassana practices, which we call insight practices, they work together, and some traditional techniques don't separate them. You practice them at the same time, and they would never talk about doing one versus the other. I found it helpful to learn how to do one and the other because they play by different rules. The rules for collecting the mind, for settling the mind, are based on simplicity and ease and not making the mind do too many complicated things at one time. The guidelines and the rules for insight practice are to see a lot of moving parts and to see many levels within one experience. And so those can be difficult things to do at the same time, both collect and gather and simplify the heart, mind, and body. And then also see its complications and start sorting out its complications. So I like to teach these two forms of meditation separately and then bring them together. But there are Buddhist schools that don't separate them. And you just teach them, and then both tranquility and calming would develop along with deeper insight into the complex nature of the mind. So when the Buddha taught, there's a large collection of his teachings, but in one particular teaching, he goes through and he said, if I were to think about the Dharma in terms of one, here are the important ones. If I were to think about the Dharma in important twos, here are the twos. And he goes all the way up to 10. Actually, it's one of his students that's doing that, and he confirms. So I just want to do a quick share screen on this. In the same discourse, he says, where there is one thing, let's see. Are you seeing the thing that says the one thing?
Yes.
Yes. So this is from the Digha Nikaya, the long discourse, number 34. It's the last one. And he says, what one thing should be developed? Mindfulness of the body that is full of pleasure. Now, it's not the body that's full of pleasure. It's the mindfulness that's full of pleasure. Because the body isn't always full of pleasure, but it's the mindful activity of the body that's full of pleasure. So when he's talking about ones, this is the one thing he draws out to say, mindfulness of the body that's full of pleasure. And most people think it's the mindfulness that's full of pleasure, not the body. But the body also can be full of pleasure in deeper meditative states and when it's not running as much stress as we do in daily life. So there is mindfulness of the body, and both can be full of pleasure, but it's actually the collected mind that's being mindful. There is a pleasure in that healthiness of mind that's being mindful. And then in that same discourse, when he comes to the twos, are you seeing the slide that says two things?
Yes.
Yes. So I said, what two things should be developed? Serenity and discernment. But if you look over on the right, it says samatha and vipassana. So serenity is one way of translating samatha, tranquility, serenity, that calming of the mind. And then the second is vipassana, discernment or insight. When the Buddha was teaching mindfulness of the body to a number of students, he compared it to the first rain that comes after the long, hot, dusty season. In a country like India, it will rain in the summer, but then it very quickly turns off and doesn't rain again. So it will rain in our summer months. And the rain pretty much concludes in September. And everything's sort of hot and moist for October and November, but then slowly the water begins to evaporate and sink into the land and run down the rivers. And by December and January and February, those are the cool months, it dries up. And then you get heat in March, April, and May, and there's very little water, no rain. And the earth breaks apart because it's so dry. And when the winds blow, it blows up a lot of dust. And so it's hot and it's dusty in March, April, and May. And by May, it's so hot and dusty that people are sort of praying for the beginning of rain. It would begin their farming season, but also breaks this incredibly oppressive heat that comes in May. And so the Buddha described mindfulness of breathing that would feel like that first rain after a long, hot, dusty season. And he said, in the same way, mindfulness of breathing soothes the mind that's stirred up, soothes the mind that is inflamed by its scattered activities and its driven nature and its worries and its obsessions. And people are looking for something calm, looking for some way to soothe themselves. And he said mindfulness of breathing could feel like that first rain that takes the dust out of the air, that brings coolness, a cool breeze finally after a long, hot season. And also refills the rivers and opens the farming season. So not only is it cool down what's hot and bothered and agitated and knowing no relief for months on end, but also begins a season of fertility and life, and things grow and green, and you can drink water again, and the air is really clean after the rain. So mindfulness of breathing, he described in that metaphor, is that transition from a mind that's scattered, exhausted, hot and tired, to one where it's collected, it's gathered, there's a cleanness, a coolness, and a type of life can grow on the other side of that practice of mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of breathing. Then he would first teach, while breathing in, I was aware I was breathing in, while breathing out, I was aware I was breathing out, and I practiced letting go. And he would send people off just to practice that simple instruction. And then when he was ready, when the students were ready, he would share more detail. And that's where these 16 steps come in. So I'm just going to briefly show you the first 8 steps, because it's where most of us will spend 99% of our practice, 99.9% of our practice really are working these first 8 steps. And it's to bring about a little bit more collection, a little bit more gathered attention to soothe what's agitated. So I just want to make sure you're seeing a slide.
Yes.
Eight steps. Okay. So this is some of, people translate these differently. And this is some of how, over the years I've collected these translations because they make the most sense in English for teaching, at least the most sense to me. So there are 16 steps and they're broken into four groupings of four. So four times four is 16. And of these 16 steps, these first eight steps, these first two groupings of four are where the predominance of our practice will be, where we put in the most effort to cool off our minds from how they get scattered and worried and fatigued and restless. So in the first grouping, the first tetrad, the first step is to know longer breaths. And the second is to know shorter breaths. Some people interpret this as you could intentionally have longer breaths to cool yourself down. You could intentionally have shorter breaths, and it's almost like a pranayama, where you breathe rapidly to energize the body. You breathe long to cool the body down. And between these longer and shorter breaths, you then just come into natural breathing. More people see this as being aware of your in-breath and your out-breath. After a while, you fall asleep just knowing in and out breaths. And so you know longer breaths and shorter breaths, so that each breath is like a snowflake. It has individual characteristics. And you don't try to compare two breaths because that would be too agitating. In the middle of a second breath, you're not seeing it and then actively trying to compare it to the breath that came before. You're just noticing breathing right now is short. Breathing right now is long. You might have a number of shorter breaths, and then your body takes this big breath inside. And so, okay, breathing is dynamic. It's not always the same breath. And that tends to be how people relate to those first two instructions. Once you're aware of your breath, you start feeling your breath in your body, the sensations of your breathing, and that opens up where you can become aware of your whole breath. I've shortened the instruction here to be simple and fit on a graph, but the Buddha actually takes the time to say, while breathing in, I experience the whole body. While breathing out, I experience the whole body. And all the way through these steps, he repeats, while breathing in, I do step one. While breathing out, I do step one. While breathing in, I do step two. While breathing out. But it's meant to be very integrated with breath awareness, that you'd, in number three, breathing in, I experience my whole body. Breathing out, I experience my whole body. There are many ways to practice with this, and it can be interesting to try several of them. Some people actually try to breathe in and experience their whole body in just like from toes to nose, breathe in and then down, nose to toes, breathe out. That can be very energizing and interesting. Generally, this is an invitation to know your body while breathing. And like I guided, we knew our shoulders, our back, down our hips and legs, knowing our arms, the front of our torso, our throat, head, neck. And then doing that while breathing and see if you can experience your whole body. Well, experience your whole body, just being aware of it. Some of you might have noticed that without intending for the body to relax, breathing and being aware of that part of your body, it would start to relax. Mostly because the tension in our minds causes tension in the body. The body is like a very loyal dog that's looking to you for cues. And even if you're worried about something 30 years from now, all the body sees is the human mind is really worried about something. I'm going to run a lot of tension just in case it needs a defensive response right now. And so our minds are all over the time scale of our life, and our body runs whatever state our mind's in. So if we're relaxing and being aware of our breath, and then we start to know those parts of our bodies, it's almost like going into a pack of dogs and calming them down generally And then calming them down one by one, just by looking them in the eyes, talking to them softly. So you talk to these different animal parts of your body, just by being aware of them and being relaxed yourself, the body begins to relax. If that doesn't happen automatically, you can take another breath in and settle. And as you're more aware of your body, there's less reinforcing the tension. So you go to step four and you calm your bodily habits. Bodily habits are the ways that our muscles hold tension unconsciously. And so you relax those habitual holding patterns. That leads to the second tetrad, the second group of four. And if you really work on the first group, the second group ripens almost automatically, so you don't have to work at it so hard. But by calming your body, circulation improves, and you can experience PT, which is this energetic aliveness of the body. You can also experience contentment in your body as it relaxes. There's better circulation and the body becomes a pleasant place to abide. As your body alivens and as it relaxes and as it's a more pleasant experience, even if some parts of the body are injured and there's pain in the body, the overall sense of the body can be relaxed as your mind relaxes. So you experience this happy aliveness plus the settled aliveness and let them blend. So here's another teaching from the Buddha about experiencing happiness and well-being while breathing. And that's very helpful for developing this cool, calm, collected heart and mind. It's only then that he recommends seriously working on how your mind is agitated. So if you are happy and contented in the present moment, your mind tends not to wander as much. So if there are still habits of mind that are active, they're usually the stickier ones. And you can say to them, hey, it's pretty nice being here and now. Why don't we let go of the past? So you can experience your habitual mind that isn't relaxing into the peacefulness of here and now. And you can point to the pleasantness being here and now, and that helps relax those habits. But if you haven't done the first six steps and given them much time to ripen, the pleasant moment doesn't seem that great. And so it's hard to convince the mind to let go of wanting to be elsewhere. This is showing a linear way through. There's a little wisdom to why there are things listed in this way. And yet chances are we're actually using, intuitively, we're kind of going through all eight. So to describe all eight at once might seem kind of complex, but to imagine you only do this in a linear fashion might not seem realistic. So it's presented in a linear fashion, and yet as we get to know these pieces, we can use them more intuitively. So with that much presentation, I'm curious to hear from a few of you what you observed, even through this morning's practice, and if any questions are coming up for you. So settling in after the lunch break, we're going to continue on, and what you'll find is helpful is maybe doing concentric circles where you start with relationship to your breath. And for those of you who struggle with the breath, you can bring it to some other simple sense or experience. So hearing or opening your eyes, taking in simple seeing. And then from there, if you have a relationship to some way of grounding yourself in the simple present, you can open up to becoming aware that you have a body, and then see if you can open up that relationship to the body. Mindfulness that there is a body, mindfulness, what you're feeling in your body. And so I'll guide you through some of that. And that's, again, most of our practice will be mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of the body. So with that said, find a posture that allows your body to be at ease. You might see in a post-lunch experience, if you're sleepy or if you feel very comfortable, but do check in with how you are right now. And then from there, allow yourself to relax and be at ease. And then attune yourself to the simple present moment. Again, like that record needle, resting lightly but in contact with the flow of the present. And this is where we'll use the breath and awareness of the body to help us stay connected to the simple present. And for some of you, you'll have to explore working with sounds or maybe opening your eyes as sights if the breath and the body are not soothing or not conducive to that ease and relaxation that we're cultivating. And while breathing in, you can be aware that you're breathing in. While breathing out, you can be aware you're breathing out. With an attitude of letting go. From a simple practice of being aware of your breath, you can become aware of your whole body supported by breathing. It might just be while breathing, I'm aware of the posture I'm in. You also might breathe in and out and become aware of parts of your body. Breathing in and out, becoming aware, your shoulders, your torso, your legs, your arms, your head. To whatever degree you're aware of your whole body, while breathing, you can invite your body to relax. Very patiently invite your body to let go of any holding patterns, any tightness, any way that your body might not be relaxed. Being aware, being aware in this way, with breathing, relaxing the body, you can breathe in and out, feeling where there is good circulation in your relaxed body, where your body is at ease. You might start where it's easiest to notice your body experiencing well-being. Maybe your feet on the floor, the relaxation of your hands, being supported from below by the floor or a cushion, chair, your bed, couch. You can actively enjoy simple breathing, being aware of your body, relaxing your body. Enjoy any well-being you feel in that process. And in this way, we can soothe what is agitated, collect what is scattered, rest what is fatigued. We can let mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, be like that cooling rain after a long hot season. Letting ourselves be simple, relaxed, and present. Most of the time, our minds wander. They wander to be happier out of the habit of looking for happiness elsewhere. So it's easier to soothe those habits if we can relate to the present in a way that's soothing, satisfying, restful, peaceful. And here you might taste moments of simple contentment, just breathing. So simple you might overlook it. One breath can be enough. Just breathing in and breathing out might hold your full attention in a very peaceful, organic way. In the moments when the breath is enough, we might miss that our minds are temporarily free of agitation, of worry, being overwhelmed by complexity. own well-being can be simple. We might overlook it. And now a half hour for a walking meditation. Again, seeing if you can walk in a way that allows for ease, contentment, simplicity, and enjoying the present moment. Enjoying the present moment in a way that uplifts you if you're sleepy, settles you if you're restless. But how can you take simple steps, be fascinated by your body, be grateful for your body, feel your weight shifting back and forth, and then maybe seeing things. If you're in your ordinary home, you might see a level of detail that you don't normally see because your mind is a little more collected. You don't want to force the mind to see things it doesn't want to see, but by inviting the mind to be settled and collected, restful, it knows a little bit more well-being. And then in its wholeness, it picks up on detail. It's one of the rewards of mindfulness, is well-being inside, but also some fascination with just simple experiences. So enjoy a half hour of walking. I'm going to talk further about the Buddha's guidance on mindfulness of breathing. One thing I want to invite us into is a type of practice where we can be aware of our bodies, maybe supported by our breathing, while we listen and contemplate something. So we can begin to find the same contented wholeness in more complex activities by trusting the practice and by discovering the practice, even when what we're doing is a little bit more complex. So although I'll be sharing a screen that has details on it and maybe using a lot of words and concepts, we don't have to rev ourselves up with that process, that you can approach listening to what the talk is, and you might find that there's a more intuitive way of hearing something that's beneficial, especially in meditation, than switching into a mode that's much more cognitively active, disembodied, and then at the end might be cognitively interesting. But you find that you're bearing some stress down in your body, or you haven't really been that aware of your body. And so the invitation is to stay in a posture that allows your body to be at ease, to be aware of your breathing, your torso and your limbs, your neck and your head. And then we can reflect upon these 16 steps. But today we're actually just going to go through the first 12 steps because they are a little bit more coherent. When you see them at the first 12 of these 16 steps that the Buddha recommended are guided towards developing calm and tranquility and collectedness. And again, there are many practices that help do this in our insight tradition. Loving kindness practice does this. Mindfulness of breathing does this. A careful, mindful investigation of the body and its senses can do this. There are 40 classic different meditations. Some of them are staring at a candle or a flame and seeing if you can collect, soothe, and make whole your attention, or looking at water, looking at the air blowing through leaves. So for thousands of years, people have been using different meditative forms to help relax their minds that are agitated, collect what is scattered, and start to feel that wholeness and some of the preciousness that comes when our attention is whole, especially on simple, ordinary things. It's one thing to try to collect and gather your mind by going to a very stimulating place like Las Vegas, where every sense door is being bombarded with what Las Vegas thinks is pleasant. You get the sounds and the sights and the stimulations, and it can hold your attention because it's so unordinary. And it doesn't lead to much peace and contentment. And then there's kind of an exhaustion after the fact. Whereas here, we're guiding our attention towards simple, ordinary things, resting our attention, and then noticing at times when our attention is more collected and our minds and bodies relax some, that there's a beauty that can arise from that wholeness of attention. And that beauty really says more about the state of our heart and mind than about the particular object. You know, you can hold the cap of an acorn, and it's so ordinary, you look at it and it has a little chip in it, so you throw it away, throw it back to the ground. Or you can look at it, calm your heart and mind, and then the detail of it becomes amazing. And you hold it, and you know, just the thing itself is beautiful. And then you realize it's grown by a tree, and it caps the acorn so beautifully, and all this beauty starts to emerge. An acorn cap is that beautiful, but a mind that can appreciate it has a lot of beauty in it as well. And that's what we're trying to do in these first, the first part of mindfulness of breathing, is to relax, gather, settle, and then watch a type of well-being emerge, not because of a specific experience we're having with external stimulation, but there's a more homegrown well-being by collecting our attention. We want to be able to practice in the way we're encouraging that. And if you're encouraging that, you do develop some insights in that process, but you can also quiet down that part of your mind that's even intellectually excited into insights, to where things get very simple, very peaceful. And that's actually the foundation in our insight tradition, to cultivate that. For reasons that are probably longer than I can go into now, our Buddhist tradition had many more millennia, thousands of years of developing that. And then as the British were taking over Burma in the 1800s, there was a movement to merge the Samatha and Vipassana practices so that lay people could have access to these teachings, and it became wildly popular, and we've inherited that merged form of practice here in the West. But people might take decades to develop this wholeness of attention. And it'd be so conducive to a good family life and to a good work life that it was immediately beneficial, and more people would practice that and then be introduced to the last four steps that we'll talk about tomorrow. But I'm making a case for, and I understand there are different points of view, so I'm not trying to say that I'm right. But when I went to Burma, one thing that I learned is how much time people were willing to spend just making their attention be whole, making it be self-content, making it be simple. And I felt there was sort of a Western impatience to get on to the real stuff. And so it was one thing that I'd like to make sure comes over as this practice matures in the West, that we look at these samatha practices and get to know them and how they work and how they benefit our nervous system, and that they're an integral part of our insight tradition. So, and then to look through that lens at some of the Buddha's teachings, and you can see sometimes how it pops out if you stop and look at it this way. So again, I'm going to share a screen. Words are going to come up on the page, but I recommend that you know your shoulders, know the back of your rib cage, know your hips, so that we don't do the ordinary thing, which is coming forward up to our heads and forward with visually and become unlocated in our bodies. I just want to check that you can see all 12 steps here.
Yes.
A few people nodding, thumbs up. Okay. So again, this is whenever the Buddha talked about anapanasati, besides the introductory teachings, which were just while breathing in, I was aware I was breathing in, while breathing out, I was aware I was breathing out, and I practiced letting go. When the Buddha formally talked about anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, it was the practice of these 16 steps. And this is the practice he practiced when he went on retreat. So the Buddha even went through these steps. And you could say, why would he need to go through these steps? He's already fully awakened. And maybe he was just doing it for our benefit. I can also imagine this was beneficial for him as well, after talking to a lot of monastics and settling disputes in the monastery. He may not be suffering, but still his nervous system would go through a lot of stimulation, and he might also benefit from going through these steps. So that's just speculation. So here are the first 12, and we talked about the first 8 earlier. So we have breathing in and breathing out, practicing letting go. Then we begin to notice that the breath changes throughout the day in its characteristics. Sometimes it's smooth, sometimes it feels rough, sometimes it's easeful, sometimes the breath has stress within it. Sometimes it's a shallow breath that doesn't seem to go very deep into your chest, other times it feels very deep. So the breath is a constantly changing experience. And that's what these first two steps point towards. And then we get into experiencing the whole body and then calming whatever feels like a habit in the body. We're not trying to neutralize the whole body and make it calm, but anything that's a driven habit of the body, holding your shoulders up, then you can relax that and let your shoulders drop. Fidgeting with your fingers, letting your hands relax. Noticing that you clamp your jaw, letting your jaw relax. So you become aware of the whole body, and you invite the whole body to relax, but you see there are these patterns of agitation in the body, and by breathing in and out, they relax over time. We get into the next group of 4, the second tatret, experiencing piti, which is an energetic aliveness, either in the body or in the mind. And so as the body relaxes, it doesn't become more and more like cement. The body relaxing doesn't become heavier and heavier. When the body relaxes, it's an alive body. And so when we let go of all these contractions and restraints, we get better circulation. And then in that circulation, we feel parts of our bodies become alive. So in this relaxation, the body has this natural buzzy aliveness. And we can experience that in step 5. While breathing in and breathe out, we feel PT in the body, this aliveness. And then while breathing in and out, we can feel sukha, this happy contentedness from the breath, from the body, from the heart and mind that are willing to be with the breath and body. It starts slow, and maybe it goes from 2% to 8% to 20%. But slowly, the percentage of you that feels well just by simply being aware of your body and relaxing becomes more and more global. And then there's a turn moment where it's not that your body is frustrated, contracted, and riddled with pain, but your fingertips feel okay, to where most of my body actually feels okay, but surely there are parts that are sore and aching, but they're smaller parts of a global whole, and the global whole is well. The global whole of my body is well. The global whole of my mind is well. But there are still some tenacious parts that are agitated. But I can now rest in the part of me that's well and keep soothing those parts that are still agitated. Then we come into step 7 and 8, where we can start turning towards any activated habits of mind, worrying about the past or the future, planning things, speculating about things, wondering what people think about us, whatever your mental habits are. You can begin to experience them, but not be totally drowning in them, because you're basically present, you're basically well. And so then you can afford to say, there's some part of me that won't completely let go. What is it? It's like, oh, I'm remembering a tough conversation I had with a family member. I can really feel the stress of that. Oh, I'm experiencing my mental habit of worrying and getting caught up in conflict. And I relax that. Oh, okay. Now that I see it, rather than just suppressing it, I can actually relax it. It's different than repressing something or suppressing something or pushing it out of you. By experiencing the fact that you're holding on to resentments, you might be able to breathe in, breathe out, and let go of resentment. And then it's not a repression or a suppression. It's an actual letting go. When the buzzy activities of mind begin to quiet, these moments open up. And they're mostly overlooked because our mind is so used to coarse entertainment that we have moments that are actually very profound, but not to our ordinary mind. And this becomes the third tetrad. So you begin to experience the space or the realm of the mind itself more than its busy content. You can actually feel into qualities of mind. Is the mind itself peaceful? Is the mind crawling with irritation? Is the mind depressively sad? Is the mind bubbly and creative? If you're inside the content of that mind, it's hard to actually feel the mind itself. So this gets a little subtle if you haven't opened up a way to be mindful of what the mind is, because most of us are taken with the content of the mind. It's brighter. So here's a silly analogy, but it actually works. It's like having a fish tank that has way too many fish in it. And someone asks you, what's the quality of the water like? And it's like, I can't see the water. All I see are fish, and they're swimming past each other, and they keep stirring up all the grime from the bottom. I'm not sure how the water is, except the fish look kind of cloudy, so I could guess that the water's cloudy. And then you get those fish to calm down, and maybe some of the fish quiet enough that you begin to actually see through the fish, and you can actually see the water. So where there is no fish, you can look through and your eye actually lands on the water. It's much more subtle than the fish. So if you're chewing on something in your mind, it's very hard to actually see your mind because you're so taken up with your what your mind's obsessed with. So again, if you had an argument with a friend or a family member, the water of your mind would be irritated, but your attention would be fixated on exactly what they said and what you wanted to say in return and how should you say it and, oh, you'll say it differently next time. The whole time you're in an angry mind, but your attention is consumed with the objects the mind is creating. Same thing falling in love. You're so enamored by what you're falling in love with that it's hard to actually stop and feel the mind in its falling in love state. And so this is the difference between knowing your mental habits and your mental content and being able to actually taste the experience of your mind itself. And here we use the word citta, which is a combination of what we think of our cognitive mind plus our emotional heart. All that is the realm of citta. So another silly example is very few of us are feeling murderous rage right now, or very few of us are showing that we're feeling murderous rage. But if you were to think back in the last year of a time stuck in traffic or somebody saying something to you upsetting or any time when life was very frustrating, you probably had more irritation than you do now. So you can ask the question, what's it like not to have my rage right now? And maybe you would look at the content of your mind, but you actually are asking a question more about qualities of your mind versus its content. You can start asking questions about, is your mind peaceful? And it's like, no, I was thinking about errands I have to do. It's like, but were you doing that peacefully or agitatedly? You're like, oh, you're right. I was being kind of spacious and I was making some lists, but not very obsessively. Like, okay, the content was one thing, but the mode of your mind was another. And that's what starts to open up in the third tetrad. Once we can calm the body and not repressively calm it, but actually experience it and calm it. Once we can calm the mind and once there's some homegrown contentment, a lot of the complications begin to settle. And you can start to be mindful of qualities of mind that are present. And again, they have emotional characteristics. They have cognitive characteristics of being focused or scattered, of being calm or restless, of being angry, peaceful, of actually being loving, of being compassionate. So cognitive and emotional qualities, you can actually start to explore that as a direct experience. But once too much story gets whipped up, it's more coarse than the mind. And so we tend to focus on the content. Once you can relax a lot of that, you can start to actually work more directly with the realm of the mind itself. So in the third tetrad, we have the step number 9, experiencing your mind, experiencing your citta. There's a step of gladdening your citta. And that might be any ways that you lift it without getting it overly energized. Make it warm, give it a sense of lift. So simple ways of gladdening your mind is, I'm so grateful for this day, for this chance to practice. Oh, I'm not whipping up any story and content. I'm just warming and gladdening the space of my mind. I might use a tiny bit of content, but content I can go easily because I'm just lifting my mind, lifting it, warming it, gladdening it. So it's a subtle maneuver, and we could talk about that. But you know your mind, and then you make sure that it's in a optimistic, happy, glad mode. Then we come into steps 11 and 12, And you take that happy mind that's relaxed from a lot of its driven behavior, and then you turn that mind back towards just breathing in and breathing out, just breathing in and breathing out. And that mind becomes very content just with one breath at a time and not using the breath for some outcome. It enjoys just the process of breathing in, just the process of breathing out. You will have many of these moments, but because they're subtle and relaxed, they don't stand out much. Or if they stand out a little bit, the ego pounces on it and says, oh, I'm doing great. I could report this and my teacher would be happy. Bah, 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 bah. I wonder if I'm better than the person next to me. Bah, 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 bah. It's like, oh, actually what was happening was worth its own experience. Just to be breathing and be content and be whole in your attention with something as simple as being aware of your body, being aware of breathing. You might notice this type of wholeness of attention. The Pali word there is samadhi, but this whole relaxed well-being while doing simple tasks around your house. And there are probably some of your favorite moments when you have this natural samadhi. What you can do mindfully when samadhi happens is you might begin to notice, this is what my own heart and mind are like when they're not actively tormented by my own impatience, irritation, insecurity, greed, suspiciousness, selfishness, doubts, worries, guilt. And it's an important orientation because our egoic mind has strategies that if I have more things and I have more power and resources and other people are proud of me and I'm projecting confidence into the world, that's when I'll be happiness. But there's something that the ego is not tracking, which is there is a kind of well-being that's much more trustworthy and can be cultivated rather than power and prestige. You can cultivate well-being by soothing the heart mind and relaxing and then getting this sort of sweet contentedness that's very simple in ordinary life. And it turns out that is expansive, much more expansive than power and privilege. Power and privilege can't prevent illness. It can't prevent aging. It can't prevent dying. It can't actually keep other people you care about from suffering. But your own inner contentment with simple things can start to address the suffering in old age, sickness, and death. And then you're more present for people who are also suffering. And that means a lot to them. So it's a simple thing that we overlook. And the idea of the third tetrad is to start, once you do the work of the first two tetrads, your system calms down, you start to know this wholeness of attention. And in that wholeness of attention, you can feel a deeper kind of well-being that's more trustworthy than what comes through any particular experience that's dependent upon your external circumstances. This word samadhi is hard to translate. And one unfortunate thing is that early English translators just used the word concentration for samadhi. And concentration gets the focus of attention in samadhi so that you're not scattered or absent-minded. But samadhi also has in it an incredible amount of homegrown well-being, and the word concentration doesn't connotate that. So you could actually be trying to concentrate your mind very aggressively and assertively, be very stressed in that process, and think that you're cultivating concentration, but you're not actually cultivating very much samadhi. So if you were very happy and content, but your mind was adrift, that's a kind of a weak samadhi because it has the contentment side, but it doesn't have the wholeness of attention. You could have wholeness of your attention, but be very aggressive when you do that and feel the stress of trying to focus your attention with willpower. And that would be very weak samadhi because it doesn't have the well-being. You all know samadhi, maybe it's when you sit down on a beach, exhale and hear the waves. Or maybe it's when you talk with a friend and you feel a lot of well-being coming up from you and you're tracking their conversation easily. So you want to, when you look at the word samadhi, you want it to connotate both a lot of contentment and well-being that has a type of harmony and wholeness in it. So when there's a lot of samadhi, often your body does feel somewhat relaxed, your mind feels somewhat relaxed, and the whole of your being is engaged in one thing, making a cup of tea, playing music, listening to friends. You can feel a kind of happy samadhi in sports when you get fully engaged. So that's what we want to cultivate through breath awareness and body awareness. And that's what step 11 is, bringing your mind into samadhi. And step 12, you haven't solved all your problems. You can easily go into circumstances where you might suffer again, but you know in the moment that there is samadhi that stands out, that that's your version of awakening. Your mind knows what it's like to not be afflicted by greed, hatred, and delusion in that moment. And that's where the Buddha's path leads to, is a very similar experience, but it needs other tools to do that. But samadhi might be the first time you get oriented out past the egoic mind and all of its worries and concerns. Just want to say a few more things about these first 12 steps, and then we can open it up for questions and for conversation. So again, of the 16 steps of Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, the first 12 are headed towards cultivating samadhi, wholeness of attention, relaxation, simplicity, so much so that a breath is all you need for contentment. Feeling your heartbeat is all you need for contentment. And that takes some training and some untangling of old habits. And maybe that doesn't feel like that's ever achievable, but with enough practice, it actually is the way that practice ripens. And so it's good to know that that is an intentional part of how practice is meant to ripen, that very simple things fill you with contentment, and you can practice in a way that simple things can give you contentment. When I was a young and ambitious meditator and I first became a monk, I was partly led by the glory of what I heard enlightenment would be like. And so part of what I was doing was working very hard, chewing on present moments for this payoff, like a slot machine. I kept chewing on present moments, the bells would go off and I would get all the quarters I'd put in back tenfold. I was waiting for this enlightenment moment. And it actually took some frustration and defeat of that whole mind state. And what it felt like when my mind let go of that whole thing is like, I may never get enlightened, but I like being a monk and I'm less ambitious. And now I'm just going to feel my steps as I walk. And I'm going to enjoy the friendship I have with people in the monastery. And this could take decades, and I might not even get there in this life. But I'm not trying to get anywhere anymore. And lo and behold, breathing was really satisfied once I let go of my ambition for some other present moment. And that's when the record needle of my practice truly started resting in the present versus using the present to get towards some fantasy goal of some better place to be. But strangely enough, resting in the present moment has a lot of the things in it that I thought I would get through payoff of enlightenment. So this developing of samadhi by being willing to rest in simple experiences, find contentment in simple experiences, letting go of some driven ambition to be somebody else, to be somebody different, started actually producing the well-being that I thought was in the fantasy of awakening. And this I learned in the second monastery that I practiced in, where they practiced these samatha techniques in and of themselves. And they said, wait for vipassana. We want to see you develop samadhi. We want to see you develop contentment. We want to see your system cool down and collect before we start contemplating intense things like your own death and dying and the dying of everybody you love. That was very agitating. And so to cool down, take the time to cool down and simplify, and then to see some of these teachings pop out, whereas before I didn't know what to make of these 16 steps. I didn't know how to practice calming my body or practicing contentment. I was too busy using meditation to achieve other goals. When my mind became much more content, I didn't have to fight so hard. My mind didn't fantasize about being elsewhere as much. And so I wasn't putting a lot of effort and willpower into being present, but it meant being kind of humble and satisfied with very simple things like seeing or cups of tea. I'd had that advice all along, but every now and then I would get teachings that would seem to get me excited again about some type of achievement, enlightenment, self-improvement, enlightenment. So 12 of these 16 steps in mindfulness of breathing are aimed at calming and collecting our attention, and then getting a glimpse of your own heart and mind when it's free, temporarily free of its own torments. Another thing to draw out here is that several times right here in these lists, you experience something before you try to relax it. So in step 3, you experience the whole body so that in step 4, you can relax the body. In step 7 and 8, you experience the mind and its habits before you relax the mind and its habits. Learning to breathe in and out with the body as it is overcomes this craving for the body you don't have, or the aversion to the body you do have. So if you actually ripen your experience of the whole body, then when you go to invite the body to relax, it's not out of craving and aversion. It's more of a generosity to remind the body it doesn't have to hold on to these habits. Then if the body relaxes or not, it doesn't lead to frustration. You're just inviting the body to relax because you've taken your time to experience it first. The same with steps 7 and 8. You experience your mental habits, and then you ask them to relax. If you go too quickly to relax your mental habits, it's more like repression, and you can feel that mental habit still chewing and trying to grab your attention, but you have to kind of keep clamping it down, saying, we're not doing that. We are just calm. Be calm. Stop it. Be calm. And that keeps the mind sort of attached to what it's wrestling with. Whereas if you breathe in and out and patiently and courageously experience your mind, then when you go to let go of the habit that's driving the mind, it's not a repression or a suppression. You can actually let go of the mind's chewing on a particular topic, and it leads to a more global, authentic relaxation. And this is actually, this gets repeated a lot in mindfulness discourses, to have the courage to experience something before you try to intervene upon it and have it relax. It could very easily be that you're using your mindfulness practice to achieve your craving and aversive goals, and then it's not mindfulness that will be all that freeing. So if you don't like who you are and you use mindfulness to create a persona that you prefer, it won't lead to very much actual happiness. So some part of mindfulness has to rest in the way things are. So when you go to let go of the suffering elements, you don't just try to substitute one version of self for another. You're trying to actually relax the agitating forces. Today, we've been working on cultivating a samatha approach, this calming and collecting of our attention inside our bodies, and using the first 12 of these 16 steps of mindfulness of breathing, using the breath, awareness in the breath, to become aware of our bodies, and through that awareness, begin to de-escalate and calm our bodies from their normal driven behavior as our mind is in modes of production. Our loyal body, like the companion of a loyal dog, is trying to keep up with us. And as we get very busy in our plans, the body gets busy. Even if we're just sitting there thinking, the body can't tell the difference between a mind that's thinking about the future but doesn't need it to be active. The body runs like a dog. If you live with dogs and you move a little bit, they'll twitch and they'll like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So our bodies are very reflective of what our minds are doing. And we might think that we're in a very calm activity, but if we're running some type of stress in our minds, it'll be echoed down in our bodies. And it's interesting that the first 12 of these 16 steps are about slowly calming down, de-escalating habits, and trying to find a calm well-being where we can gather, collect, and maybe even heal some of the impact of these background habits that run unconsciously, whether we're aware of them or not. So what I wanted to add here is intentionally bringing in loving kindness as either an approach to practice or as an active engagement with breath and body awareness. Because another thing that we run in the background of our minds is anxiety about ourselves, and then taking false refuge in peak moments of our self-assessment, and then finding that it wasn't permanent, and then getting anxious again. So bringing kindness into how we breathe, how we're aware of our bodies, how we connect with others, is another samatha practice. And there's a lot of wisdom in how to cultivate loving kindness. Some of the modes of loving kindness are start abstract, where you picture yourself as a child, or you bring up the memory of someone who cares about you. Another way you can practice loving kindness practice, which helps with this samatha cultivation and helps with samadhi, is doing breath practice and body awareness practice that is suffused with loving kindness, both as how you are practicing, but maybe actively upfront in how you practice. So one phrase that blends very easily with mindfulness practice, one metta phrase, is may I love myself just as I am. And you could take that phrase to think about yourself abstractly in this time of your life, who you've been historically. But you can also use that phrase to guide loving kindness into just as you are right here and right now. So you could even add those words to the loving kindness phrase, may I love myself just as I am right here and right now. If that helps support bringing that loving kindness attitude right to make contact with who you are moment by moment, not in any fixed sense of who you are. May I love myself just as I am right here, right now. Just as I am right here, right now. And what you might find is that that influences how you practice. And so there's less of this unconscious, okay, count your breaths, got to do better than yesterday. Somebody else is doing better than you are. Seems like you were better before lunch and now your practice has fallen apart. I'm very disappointed with you. You can run a lot of these things in the back of your mind, even in the foreground of your mind. And it seems true. So it seems like you're just looking at reality and not see you have an aversive mind. And so how do we catch that we have mental habits running? And how do we actually let them go? How do we calm them? There are many mental habits. And so when you start practicing things like the Brahma Viharas, they begin to show you some of your mental habits that you take for granted, that you're not so conscious of. And then you learn how to relax and quiet the suffering habits, and maybe even start practicing habits that blend very beautifully with presence and samadhi and the intention of the goal and feeling that endogenous sense of well-being. And so those are all in the category, and they can all eventually be blended, but they each have a specific medicine in them to countering a trend. So if that said, I just want to do a simple guiding practice of loving kindness practice that's connected with breath and body. And you might see if it sounds like the same way you were practicing earlier, and therefore you're just confirming that you have a kind approach. It also might show you a kinder way to practice just being with one breath at a time. To do that, invite your body into a posture that is a gift to your body. Rather than your body being a vehicle to drive where your mind wants to go, see if you can sit in a way that is good for your body, allows your body to relax. We're more bringing in the intention of kindness and how we practice. Does your body need to stretch a little bit before it could go into a peaceful stillness? Or are you asking it to go be still and deal with its own discomfort quietly in the background? So, hey, body, I'm your friend. Here we are. We're just sitting down. You get to rest. This is going to be good for you too. Oh. So, is that how you practiced before? Did you practice sitting and finding a still posture with that much loving intention to your body? It's okay to do it. And you sit and you say, hey, mind, boy, do you carry a lot of stress and responsibility. The way we're going to practice here is not a new stress and a new responsibility. We're not going to practice in a way that you could get it wrong, that you need to worry about all the instructions. This isn't something you're going to fail at. So I put aside past, I put aside future. We're just going to rest. We're intentionally using this practice so it tastes like kindness. It's born out of kindness. It's a practice of kindness to our bodies, to our emotional world, our cognitive world. Allow yourself to take a few deep breaths and let go of anything that might be agitating, burdensome, complex. See if you can enjoy being a simple human animal breathing. Trusting your animal to breathe how it needs to. Your mind and your body get to relax. And then practice in a way where each moment feels like a relaxation, a well-being. Now you might have already the tone of loving kindness as you're aware of your breath and your body. You can also use the support of a metta phrase, such as, may I love myself just as I am. And you can add right here and right now. And watch this unconscious drive begin to relax, that there's a better version of you you need to become or cling to, measure yourself from. I love myself just as I am. You can say that every now and then. Some people also enjoy saying that phrase in some combination with their breath. So your breath is saying that phrase. The way you're breathing is aligning with that phrase. The way you're resting in a still posture aligns with the intentions of that phrase. May I love myself just as I am. Let your breathing and your body support that sentiment. If you relax and your mind wanders, that's okay. Minds do that. Maybe you could encourage just a little more attentive self-love. Just so we don't drift away into old habits. But there's no cause for criticism, harshness, impatience. Still just a simple animal, breathing, relaxing, being kind to itself. And you can experiment changing some of the words if it helps. May I love myself just as I am. May I be kind to myself just as I am. May I be friendly with myself just as I am. We can use this approach and this phrase to support being mindful of our bodies. May I love my body just as it is. May I love my shoulders. May I befriend my shoulders. May I be kind to my shoulders, just as they are. May I love my torso, front and back and sides, and all the space inside. Just as it is. May I love my legs my actual legs, just as they are. Alive human legs. May I love my arms, my wrists, and my hands, just as they are. Gently breathing in and out, supporting awareness of your arms, wrists, and hands. Welcoming a kindness, a friendliness, an appreciation. Breathing in and out, welcoming kindness, can become aware of your throat, your jaw, your teeth, your tongue. Your face. Your whole head. And now while breathing in and breathing out, become aware of your whole body and allow your body to relax, to let go of any stress it's holding. I invite you to bring your hands to your heart. Feel yourself breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Welcoming a kindness and warmth to your awareness of breathing. And then with your eyes closed, imagine reaching your hands forward, or you can move your hands forward and sharing this kindness with all the beings out in front of you. Whatever beings you may come in contact with. Sending out this warmth. presence, from your body glowing outward, and you can open your eyes and look at a whole bunch of beings in front of you. You can, like dogs meeting in a dog park, you can wag your tail, wag your fingers at everybody. Being just a little silly shows the other animals they're around safe animals. They're wagging and smiling that much. Some deep part of us wants to know that we're safe. So you're around other beings wishing you well. You can pick a specific person. They don't even know it. It's like a secret Santa. You're wishing that person well. You can wish a whole column well, particular row. Get the whole group. Okay, everybody, that comes close to concluding this day. The managers have a few things to say. But again, this is a whole weekend of practice. So tomorrow we're going to do more of the Vipassana practices growing out of the Samatha practices. To do that, it's helpful if you keep this evening simple and less agitating. If you already have plans that are agitating, do your best to breathe your way through them. But stay restful, stay simple as you can. Cultivate this homegrown well-being by being present, moving just a little slower than normal, or at least not your speediest version of yourself.